this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what is future bring, and I certainly want to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for this evening, they're the views of our special guest, Tex Mars. Now, if you study the writings of the secret societies and sinister organizations, and there are these organizations that are out there. We actually read their writings because we want to be able to explain to you what's really going on. You will find that they openly admit that they have been around for thousands of years, that they actually hide their emblems everywhere you look. They hide them in plain sight, but they feel that most Americans are just too foolish or too superficial or too consumed in the good life to be concerned about the fact that there really are secret organizations in the world today, as there have been for the last 5,000 years. You look on the back of the dollar bill, you see their emblem, the pyramid capped by the all-seeing eye. You look at the screen, you have CBS on the screen, you look at the right lower quadrant, you see the eye that's projected there. These are all satanic emblems. You look at so many of the monuments in Washington, D.C., and throughout the world, and time and time and time again, you'll see that glorified eye in a triangle that hovers above the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill. That's the emblem of the ancient mystery religions. But how many people are going to tell you that? Well, of course, Tex has been studying this for a long time, and he's done a wonderful job. He's put together a book entitled Mysterious Monuments, an encyclopedia of secret Illuminati designs, Masonic architecture, and occult places. And Tex, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Hey, Dr. Stan, it's always good to be with you, especially on such an important topic that really envelops our everyday life and has an incredible amount of influence on what our future is going to be.
Amen to that. And, of course, the difficulty is that since there's very, very few people other than your ministry, mine, and maybe one or two others that really talks about these things, why don't you sort of give the background of, about the secret societies, which basically are satanic in nature, a part of this eternal battle between God and Satan that is not imaginary, not theoretical. It's being acted and carried out today. But why don't you sort of give an overview of it?
Well, Dr. Stan, you are right. You know, you've done so much yourself. I remember you authored the book and did many studies on the influence of secret societies, foundations, and so forth, of the elite in our society. And one of their goals, too, I think, has been something that you have exposed. I remember we offered your tape set in my own ministry and organization about their objective of depopulating the world. And really very scary. And, you know, you talked about the Georgia Guidestones at a time when nobody else was, you know, even knew that they existed. And that's one of the architectural curiosities, let's just call it, in Mysterious Monuments. Really throughout history, we've had the people who gather themselves in the secret hobbles and organizations, unknown generally to the average citizen, for their own advantage, and I think because they really had a bent of soul and mind that was dark, so they just preferred that dark side. Today, you know, they proliferated into all kinds of names, from those who attend the Bohemian Grove, those leaders, to the Order of Skull and Bones, Freemasonry. Secret societies really on every side. But the interesting thing is there is a connection.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Tex Mars. We're going to be talking about his fascinating book. It's an encyclopedia, really, called Mysterious Monuments. Go right ahead, Tex.
Okay, we're still on.
We're still on, yeah. You go right ahead.
Great, excuse me. Well, One of the things that's very interesting and that I document conclusively in Mysterious Monuments is that all of these secret societies have as their foundation the same occult secret doctrine. And in your introduction, you're absolutely correct. This really harkens back to the ancient mystery religion. And in all of those ancient mystery religions, again, we see the common characteristics. Worship of the sun god, for example. Worship of a goddess entity. And then, as vulgar and coarse as it may seem, even the sacred sex act, you know, that was performed in the various temples. Now, at first, you would not think these ancient mystery religions would make a comeback. But in effect, it's not really a comeback. It actually is a continuation, in a secret way, of this mystery religion. The same religion from Babylon, Egypt, Greece, and Rome, it had spread throughout the world after the Tower of Babel, that the Bible even talks about in the book of Genesis. It went on, you know, over into Asia, into China, into Mesoamerica, South America. So you get much of the architecture that really is very common, you know, the ziggurat of Babylon, the ancient pyramid. They've recently found over 1,000 ancient pyramids archaeologists have unearthed, for example, in China. And yet you see the same ones among the Aztecs, the Toltecs, the Mayans, the Incas, where they had, you know, human sacrifices. And again, worship of the sun god. But we don't think about these things. We think we're somehow immune from this, and yet the architecture of in the United States reflects these same mystery religions, and that's what I've done in this book. I don't think ever before, really, in an entire book, and this is a massive project here, over 875 photos show you that these people still worship the mystery religion. They worship death. They have the sex ritual as part of their rite. And this architectural colossus has grown up all around us. It is absolutely everywhere.
And the thing is, it's absolutely everywhere, and yet the average person doesn't see it. I mean, they see it every day. They see manifestations of it. It's hidden in plain sight. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, of course, at Texas, simply talking about these ancient mystery religions, these secret societies have been around for thousands of years. But, of course, you're never going to read about them in school. You're not going to study about them in colleges. You're certainly never going to be told about them, probably by your ministers. In fact, he may not even know about them. Or if he does, he will be afraid to speak about them. Why? Well, because one of the most prominent secret societies in America today are the Masons. These people have sworn blood oaths. They have, but they've infiltrated our churches. They've infiltrated our seminaries. And if you are a Mason, if you're a minister and you dare to speak out against Masonry in America today, you'll be looking for a new church within a very, very short period of time, if you are allowed to live. And people say, oh, that couldn't go on in America. And I would say, why not? We have a book written by Charles Finney on Masonry. Charles Finney, of course, was around in the 1830 to 1860, 1870, leading American minister at that time, really responsible for the Second Great Awakening. But he writes a book on Freemasonry and of course, the crimes that it committed during his lifetime. Also, an appendum to that is the story of four ministers who had spoken out against Masonry in modern-day times, and every one of them had lost their churches. This is not imaginary. And yet, of course, the average American has no idea that there are Rosicrucian secret society, Rosicrucian members all across America today. They even have a temple right close by where I live, and certainly in San Jose they have other temples. I believe one in, is that Wheaton, Illinois, where the other one is, Tex, you remember?
There's different rites, of course, but the one you mentioned there in California, the Amorc,
right,
is the largest rite of the Rosicrucians. But even over in Europe, you know, Benjamin Franklin, one of our nation's founders, as you know, was a Rosicrucian. And Thomas Jefferson studied Rosicrucianism. So it's got a lot of influence and has had for many a decade.
And yet most people have no idea the part that these people played in the foundation of our country, the dual foundation, one Christian and certainly the other occultic. And until you understand that for years the Christian was the predominant religion here, today the occultists already are pretty well in control. Wouldn't you agree with that, Tex?
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes we get a little peek. You know, some years ago there was a lawsuit filed. There evidently was a financial squabble within the Rosicrucian institution. And it turned out that, according to the papers that were filed, Senator Ted Kennedy was on the board of directors of the Rosicrucians. Now, the odd thing about that is that Sirhan Sirhan had joined, I'm sure at a very lower level, the Rosicrucians, according to the FBI, many of the books and the things that were found in his apartment were Rosicrucian studies of Sirhan Sirhan. So we see the incredible, that somehow connected even one of the Kennedys along with a Slayer, supposedly, at least, you know. There's some question about that. Of Bobby Kennedy. But you know, what I find is interesting is in America, these mystery religions and their architecture, Dr. Stan, is this worship of death. You know, Christianity worships life. We know, even Jesus said that God is God of the living and not the dead. But all the way back to ancient Egypt, Osiris was the god of the dead, the lord of the underworld. And so these men and some women have worshipped this god of the dead, this worship of death and darkness. You know, and so we go back, we have an understanding then about the order of skull and bones in Freemasonry, how the initiate lies in a coffin and is raised up out of that coffin. And we understand how they worship this huge god of fire, this 42-foot owl at the Bohemian Grove each year, in the Redwood Forest there outside San Francisco. And here's an interesting thing. The Freemasonry itself, and I have a picture in the Mysterious Monument of the House of the Temple, the headquarters of the largest Scottish Rite, Freemasons. And it is designed by a man named Pope, the architect, as an exact replica of the ancient Halicarnassus. It was one of the seven ancient wonders of the world. It was the tomb of King Mausolus. And in fact, you know, our English word mausoleum came from the tomb of King Mausolus. Mausoleum. And so, you know, I call it, Dr. Stan, rightly so, that's where the congregation of the dead meets, in an actual tomb that's built on the order of the ancient Grecian king, Mausolus.
In fact, this is right in Washington, D.C. This is the headquarters of the 32nd degree Scottish Rite, the 33rd degree Scottish Rite. And, of course, what is it doing in Washington, D.C.? Well, of course, the Masons, which are a secret society that actually have, various degrees related to the Rosicrucians and the Knights Templar, they meet regularly. The leaders of Freemasonry meet regularly in Washington, D.C. and have a powerful influence on the policies of my nation, and most people don't even understand that the upper echelons of Masonry, those above the 33rd degree, begin getting into certainly all sorts of Luciferianism. But let's get back to your book, because your book simply has these pictures of these demonic images in architecture all throughout the world, and even many of our own buildings in Washington, D.C. have these demonic images. Would you like to talk about some of them?
Oh, absolutely. I would like to mention that same Halicarnassus, the tomb of, King Mausolus, this house of the dead, has been mirrored in a number of other monuments around the world. In New York City, Standard Oil, corporate building, you know, was built by John D. Rockefeller. We're talking about, you know, the Exxon Mobil, you know, combine and so forth, that originally was, all came out of Standard Oil. The Standard Oil building looks like a normal skyscraper until you get to the top, and the very top of it is, in fact, another replica of the tomb of Mausolus. I mean, how can you have a great mausoleum or tomb at the top of the Standard Oil building? And I also show that John D. Rockefeller's grave site is actually a huge, towering Egyptian obelisk. And that's the gravesite of John D. Rockefeller. Now, in our nation's capital that you mentioned, the cover of the book, I think, is a great place to start that, Dr. Stan. The photo, it's a picture on the front cover of the book. This is the fountain in front of the most magnificent building, one of the most magnificent buildings in the world, the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. What would people, Americans, because we've been taught that we're a Christian nation, that our founding fathers were Christians. Now, there's no doubt that there were some, a few Christians among them, because, you know, the Christian church is not going to be extinguished. That's the way it is. But nevertheless, we have always been a minority in this or any other country. And like so, that's what we are in America. Now, what this is, when you look at it, this is actually a huge nude or naked, gigantic, muscular god from the ancient Greco-Roman pantheon of gods. This is Neptune, also called Poseidon. And he's rising up out of the waters of chaos. That's what this fountain shows. He's preceded by a huge, vicious, spitting sea serpent. And on each side of him is a herald who has a conch shell in his hand. And he's, you know, blowing on that like a trumpet almost. And they're announcing or heralding the arrival or the emergence of the great beast god that comes up out of the sea.
And but of course, that is not the god that we worship, though.
Oh, no, of course not. Because in Revelation 13, verse 1 in the Bible, though, this is the amazing thing. God foresaw the worship of all these ancient gods and goddesses and their revival in the last days in a mighty way. He gave a vision to the Apostle John. And John said in Revelation 13:1, you know, I beheld a beast rising up out of the sea. Now, that great sea beast received his power from the dragon, from Satan. And he spake like a dragon. So this is, in fact, the great beast that rises up out of the sea. Now, the interesting thing is this beast has a woman who is his, let's just say, his consort or mistress, at least in symbology. And, in fact, in Washington, D.C., atop our capital, that even Thomas Jefferson called the temple of the people, and it is in the form of a great Greek-Roman temple, the great goddess, she resides. In fact, she stands atop as an idol atop the Capitol building. Now, how did that happen? How did we have a goddess? Remember, the Apostle Paul in the book of Acts said that the goddess was worshipped by the whole world at one time, and one of her names was Diana of the Ephesians. He said she's the goddess whom all the world worshipeth.
And, of course, the thing is that most people have no idea. They never look at the architecture. They never think of it. But, of course, the people on the other side do think of it. They understand it. And they hide their emblems in plain sight. Look at the back of your dollar bill. Ask yourself, what is a pyramid capped by an all-seeing eye? But remember, the all-seeing eye is not settled on the top of the pyramid. That's symbolic. The eye and the capstone will not settle until they have accomplished their goal, which, of course, is a one-world government, a one-world religion, and the enthronement of their leader, not the God that we worship, but, of course, part of the Trinity of darkness. We'll be back in just a moment. It's time people began looking beyond the end of their nose. The symbols are all around us. Well, certainly that, you know, is just so revealing. And yet most people would look at the this fountain outside the Library of Congress, and they would have no idea what it was all about, would they?
They really wouldn't, Dr. Stan. And they would say, well, surely, you know, surely that's not Satan. That image is not of a satanic figure. But in the ancient mystery religion, they had the god that came up out of, you know, out of the sea. And remember, even the Philistines worshipped this great Dagon, the great fish god who rose up out of the sea. But they also had a great god of the heavens. And that was, you know, the Greeks called him Zeus. And it's interesting, again, we get back to the Bible, because the Bible in the book of Revelation says that the people in the city of Pergamos had a special problem. They had to really overcome, because they lived in that city where the throne of Satan was. That's Pergamos. Now that because at the city in the city of Pergamos in ancient Greece was a great statue or idol of Zeus. Now this Zeus is an interesting thing about Zeus. He had a great lighthouse. In the temple, the harbor of Egypt. It was called Pharaoh's Lighthouse. And there was this gigantic lighthouse. And it's interesting that the Freemasons in Alexandria, Virginia, overlooking Washington, D.C., Dr. Stan, they built the Washington National Masonic Monument. It is a copy of the great lighthouse of Alexandria, Egypt. So you have Alexandria, America, Alexandria, Egypt. So they always mirror these things. So that even the god Poseidon will have another god. You see, there's always a hidden god, and then there's the god of the heavens that they call Zeus. At the Rockefeller Center in New York City, they have a carved in the exterior of that building is, in fact, Zeus, a great, you know, image of Zeus. And he's bending over, sort of like the old Blake painting, you know. And he's bending over a globe. He's measuring the globe. He has in his hand a Masonic compass. It's Zeus. So this Zeus character in stone is found over and over again in buildings. I have pictures of it throughout the United States and the world in stone. So, obviously, this is one of the great gods that they worship. And, you know, just as you mentioned the great seal there, it had to have a hidden side. There's always these two sides. The Romans even worshiped Janus, the two-faced god. Let's just call him Two-Faced. The two-faced god. And the Masons, one of their top symbols is the double-headed eagle. So, again, you go back to the Aztecs, and they had a double-headed god, and so do the Hindus, because all of these religions are basically mystery religions. But it's in Washington, D.C., we see these double figures just everywhere. And, of course, the ultimate in blasphemy, I think, is the Washington Monument. Now, remember, there's the Washington National Masonic Monument in Alexandria, Virginia, which is the Pharaoh's Lighthouse.
Hold that thing for just a moment. We bring our stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, of course, is Tex Mars. We've just been talking about these monuments that you'll see every place. And, of course, the Washington Monument is an obelisk. This is an occult monument. The average American doesn't understand occultism. They don't understand that the ancients worshipped these mystical gods, but they really were not mystical. They represented the demonic forces, which have always worked within the world, represented as the prince of this world, who is Satan. And when you, for instance, as I have, and I know Tex has gone to Elberton, Georgia, where you have this the so-called American Stonehenge, the Georgia Guidestones, where, of course, a secret monument. You can see it sitting out there in the field, but basically nobody knows who put the money up for it. A man called himself R.C. Christian, but he admitted that wasn't his real name. He admitted he was part of a secret society. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you go to Alberta, you can track down the story that both Tex and I have tracked down. The man who built this monument, this 20 feet high, a stone granite monument with a Ten Commandments that come from the dark side, which call for the, maintaining the world population at 500 million in balance with nature. Basically, Chris, what they're talking about is killing off over 90% of the world population. The man who built the, who put up the money called himself R.C. Christian, but that wasn't his name. And to this very date, nobody knows who these members of the secret society are, and you're never going to hear this discussed on television. You're never going to hear Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, or so many of the communicasters talking to you about the this occult monument in Elberton, Georgia, that calls for, in essence, the elimination of 90% of the world's population, and of course talks about world government and population control. And certainly, Tex, I know you went to that monument. You tracked down some fascinating information about it, didn't you?
I did. It was very, very interesting. I visited the City Hall of Elberton, Georgia. And they build themselves there as the granite capital of the world. There's a few other cities. There's a granite shoals here in my part of Texas that claims it's the granite capital. And the granite came from it. For the Texas state capitol, and by the way, there's a huge statue of the goddess that rises on top of the Texas state capitol. And she has a star in her hand in that statue in the Austin, Texas, because she was called the star goddess, and they worshiped her as a star, because they worship all of the cosmos, the planets, the heavens. They believe Zeus is up there. You know, the Constitution of the Freemasons, the first Constitution that was written by a Britishman named Anderson, Dr. Anderson, the funnest piece for it, you know, they always had a piece of work, you know, artwork, as the funnest piece for their books, and that was true for the Masonic Constitution. It showed various pillars and columns. Up in the sky was some kind of a god, and it turns out to be Apollo, who is the son of Zeus, riding his chariot through the stars. So they do worship the stars, the zodiac. And if you don't believe that, visit the Federal Reserve Building. Here are the money people of the world, you know, Ben Bernanke and before him Alan Greenspan. And when you go into the Federal Reserve Building, look up to the ceiling inside the lobby, because there's a huge painted mural of the zodiac, the signs of the zodiac. I think that's quite interesting, because in the book of Ezekiel in the Bible, God told Ezekiel, dig in the wall of the temple and I'll show you something. And the prophet Ezekiel dug in the wall and he looked, made a hole, and he looked inside. And all this was, you know, in a dream or in a vision. And he saw the apostate learned elders of Zion. And they were all, they had their faces toward the sun, and on the walls all around them, they had all of these creeping creatures and astrological signs. They were worshiping the gods of the starry heavens, of the cosmos. And that very same image is at the Federal Reserve, and as well as a number of other places in Washington, D.C. There's zodiacs galore all over Washington, D.C., painted in stone and so forth, and this is not unusual. The same gods of the zodiac, the Grand Central Terminal railroad station in New York City was built by Vanderbilt. He was a Freemason. He was the richest man in the world. I have a lot of information about the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, so forth in my book. But at the very apex of the Grand Central Terminal railroad station is the god Mercury.
And, of course, the thing is that if you go into Washington, D.C., you'll see the signs of the zodiac everywhere. I mean, I don't know, I used to know the 10, 20 of them in our major government buildings. This is the worship of the occult gods. Why are these painted on the ceilings of so many of our buildings in Washington, D.C.? And why doesn't anybody ever comment on them? And the reason is, of course, you're not to understand the occult forces at work in our society. Well, go right ahead, Texas. Sydney, I think it's also apparent, but unless somebody points it out to you, you would never know. I had no idea that the significance of so many of the statues, so many of the murals, so many of the fountains and other things in Washington, D.C., until somebody points them out, and the relationship to the ancient mystical gods that were worshipped by the people, members of the ancient mystery religions. And suddenly, when somebody points them out, you realize that they're everywhere.
You really do. You know, your question earlier was really it's something that's really mind-numbing almost, and that is, why don't we know? Why aren't these things taught to us when we study the buildings? Of course, the kids are shown pictures of the Capitol, maybe of the Washington Monument, of the Jefferson Monument, and so forth. But they're never told about the origins and what these things represent. And it's almost like some kind of a strange conspiracy. It has to be so immense. So let me give you an example of this. It's almost amazing. You know, and I'm not, by the way, I'm not going to pick on any Christian denomination or group. That's not my purpose. We have a greater purpose in mind. That's to expose Satan, you know. But it's interesting that I was in Nashville, Tennessee, and I went there on purpose to visit the Parthenon. And that's in my book, too. It has a number of pictures. You see, a little bit over 100 years ago, the city fathers and the rich of Nashville, being Masons and members of secret societies, built a great temple of the goddess Athena of Greece in their city. And in the public park of Centennial Park, there rises this great temple. They brag that it is built within 1/8 of an inch of the temple that is now in ruins in Athens, Greece, on the Acropolis, on the hill. And so I said, golly, I've got to go see that and try to find out and investigate why they built that there and what's its purpose. Dr. Shen, when I got there, it was just an amazing thing. If I can remember, it was just close to the year 2000 when I first visited. And they had a huge rainstorm. Boy, lightning and thunder. It lasted quite a while, but I only had a couple days to stay there, so I went on to the Parthenon building. And I found there was nobody there but me, you know, at least, you know, no tourists, just my wife, Wanda, and I.
And hold on, so we're going to bring a few statistics on board, and I want them to hear your story right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Sydney, Texas is actually talking about it, going to visit the Parthenon, and whereabouts was this in the United States?
This is in Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, Tennessee, and of course, it's actually patterned after the Parthenon that you'll find in Athens, Greece. It was built for, as a tribute to the to Athena, certainly the this god. And so here they have a Parthenon in Nashville, and Tex is describing going there one evening, and nobody's there, just he and his wife, and this gigantic Greek replica of this Greek monument. And you have to understand, why are they bringing these things here? Well, they understand, of course, this is all about worship of the occult and these ancient gods. And, of course, this is flies in the face of our Christian heritage. People don't understand that from the very time America was founded, even before it was founded as a nation, starting probably in the mid-1600s, the members of occult secret societies, specifically in this case the Rosicrucians, were coming to America and actually, of course, putting their people into key positions in government, so that when America was founded, there were two forces. There was the occult force, but most people had no idea. Most of the people were Christians. But then there was the Christian force. But, of course, the Christians had no idea the many times the very people were advising them and working them were coming from the dark side. So pick the story up there.
Well, when we visited, as I mentioned, there was an incredible thunderstorm. And so, you know, nobody had gone there that day, and everybody had left. But Juan and I were determined to see this Parthenon, this gigantic. And, of course, when we entered, they had the door was just, I don't know, it must have been, you know, 35, 40 foot tall bronze with all kinds of astrological symbols on it, the gods and goddesses and serpents and so forth. When we went in, they had a security guard there at the door, and he sort of felt sorry for us because, you know, we got a little bit wet and everything. And I began to talk with him, told him I was from Texas, I was visiting, and I told him my purpose, that I like to write about subjects like this. And he said, would you like to go in the sanctuary? And I might be able to introduce you to the sculptor, you know, the artist who is working on the great statue of the goddess. I said, working on the statue? He said, oh, yes. He said, you see, this temple was built 100 years ago, but now they waited a century to build, and that's what they call the Centennial Park. In the sanctuary, the worship area, they have built now a 42-foot-tall statue of the goddess. And they're back there, the sculptor is working on it right now. And it was, you know, it was like from some movie or something. This huge statue had all this gauzy linen over spread over so nobody could see it, only the sculptor. And they had a day scheduled, Dr. Stan, to pull all that down and have the big ribbon cutting of it, you know, the unveiling of the goddess. He went back and he talked to the sculptor, and to the guard's amazement, the guy said, yes, I'll talk to this Mr. Mars. Well, you know how God makes appointments. he had about 6 or 10, I really didn't count, artist assistants working with him. It was a huge project. His name was Alan LaCroix, and he was a very nice gentleman, and the artist, and he told me he had been working for 6 solid years on this monstrosity. That was, it had been his whole life after he won the commission to do this. And I looked at it, and I went all around it, and there were astrological symbols, and there was a beast like on her chest, you know, like a devil god carved in her chest. And to her left, this great goddess Athena statue, which turned out to be 42 foot tall, 4 plus 2 equals 6, there was a huge standing rising serpent that was her companion. I asked the artist, Mr. LaCroix, I said, what do you think the purpose of this is? Why are you doing this? He said, well, you know, they worship the ancient goddess in the olden times. And he said, you know, I don't know a lot about religion. I said, yeah. He said, but I understand that there will be a lot of people who worship this statue. I said, no, really? He said, oh, yes. He said, well, you know, and listen to this, Dr. Stan. He says, well, you know, Mr. Mars, with the environmentalist movement, many worship the great goddess in the guise of Gaia. And he said, and I expect that many in Wicca, many in the goddess movement will be here for the unveiling of this statue. Well, I found that very interesting. And by the way, later on, I got all the newspaper clippings and everything of the unveiling. The king and queen of Greece came over. Albert Gore, who was the senator from Tennessee, was there. The governor of Tennessee was there. People, Freemasons and others came from all over the United States. It was an extravaganza, and goddess worshippers came from all over the world for the unveiling of this great statue. And they had a number of goddess and witchcraft rituals. So I just thought the whole thing was just absolutely preposterous. Now, when I went back to my hotel, the next day was a work day, I called up the Southern Baptist Convention headquarters. They are headquartered in Nashville, just a few miles from this park and this great goddess statue and temple. And I talked to an official there, and I said, what do you think about this? And he said, well, we don't have any opinions on it. I said, you don't? He said, I really don't know anything about it. We really don't know anything about it. He said, I don't see how what that has to do with Christianity.
It has everything to do with it. It is the antithesis of Christianity.
I said, really? He says, no, I don't see anything. I said, it doesn't bother you that a 42-foot-tall idol of a goddess, the same one worshipped, Paul said the whole world worshipped, that goddess, the statue has been restored right here in America, not in Greece, but in America. And he said, well, I just don't know anything about those things. We just preach Christianity. I said, but Apostle Paul preached Christianity. So it showed there was something, you know, it says in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 that because they received not the truth, God sent them a strong delusion that they would believe the lie.
And I think that's really so true, Tex. I think there is a spiritual a blindness all across America today among our Christian people to see what's really going on out there. Everything is hidden in plain sight, whether the Georgia Guidestones, where they have satanic and Wiccan ceremonies, on government property. I mean, the local community has been given the right to and maintains this emblem. And is this a public area, too, the Parthenon there? And,
absolutely. This is, of course, they do get donations from the rich and so forth, but it's done with government money. You know, it's very significant. As we left, the sun had come back out and things were prettier. As we walked out, they had a guy, and he had dreadnought type hair. He looked like a Jamaican type of fella, and he was conducting a sun ritual, voodoo type ritual, on the steps. And he had his little stuff out and incense and everything. So it seemed that he recognized the significance. You know, this voodoo worshiper recognized the significance of the great goddess, but all the Southern Baptists of that city had no idea. Now, I went down the highway, or I should say up the highway, a ways in Tennessee. Now, remember, this is the Bible Belt. So if it's there, it would be everywhere. I visited the city of Memphis in Tennessee. There we have the sister city to the great Memphis in Egypt city. And that's where they have the Great Pyramid of Giza. And behold, they had just finished building the Great Pyramid, the Great American Pyramid.
Right, a replica of the one that's in Giza, isn't it?
Right, it is. And I have pictures of that in my book and a picture of the man, the billionaire who's responsible for it. He's giving a as above, so below, occult symbol with his hand. This is in one of the first two chapters of my book. Isaac Tegret is his name. He's the founder of the Hard Rock Cafe. You know, they have these T-shirts. And the symbol is the sun. And it says Hard Rock Cafe. It's a white T-shirt. And it has the sun sign. Just a great big yellow or orange orb or sun. Hard Rock Cafe. He had gone over to India at one time and worshipped the Hindu guru Sai Baba. But then he had gone to Egypt, and he says he spent the night. He bribed a guard. Now, this is a billionaire. Okay, we're not talking about some little guy. This guy also owned, now get this, the Phoenix, Arizona Suns, get the name, basketball team. Oh, yeah. I mean, they got it all plugged in, don't they? But he said he spent the night in the king's chamber, deep inside, in the middle of the pyramid.
In Giza, right.
Yeah, in Egypt. And he had bribed a guard to let him spend the night there, where the big, huge stone sarcophagus is, where the pharaoh was laid. And he says at the stroke of midnight, his testimony is that a great light came forth and illuminated the inside of the chamber, and a voice came and told Mr. Tegret, you will build a pyramid like this one in America. And he was following then the voice that he had received, that I believe was Lucifer. Now, you know, I knew this immediately what this was, because in the ancient mystery religions, they did have a ceremony where they went deep in a cave, and at the stroke of midnight, they call it their ceremony, the sun at midnight, a great light would appear, supposedly, and a voice. Now, you know, I don't know if this was a fiction of his mind or what, but I'm just saying this is his testimony, Mr. Tegret, and he followed the voice and built this great American pyramid there on the banks of the Mississippi to make it similar to the banks of the Nile. And so they have brought then the devils, I believe, the monuments, the idols, the statues, the very temples, the tombs, and mausoleums, they have brought from far lands, and they have built them right here in America.
And I really think it's so important that people understand that the Great Pyramids, certainly these are places of worship. Worship for these people worshiping the sun god. They're perfectly aligned north, south, east, and west. And these were worship centers as much as they were burial places. But they can't let the public understand that any more than they can let them understand that if you see the same pyramids in South America, step pyramids there, where they were doing their human sacrifices, these mystery religions and satanic organizations have been around since the beginning of time. And the fact that most Americans don't recognize what Tex is talking about simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, before we go on, Tex, I do want to give you an opportunity to get out your website, the telephone number. We will be carrying your book. We've ordered some. We have them here to offer to people. It's called The Mysterious Monuments, and my goodness, it's, what is it, 600 or 700 pages somewhere there?
It's 625, and that's very, very large format.
It sure is. It's 8.5 by 11, so, I mean, it's a magnificent book. And for people who have any question what we're talking about, I mean, here is the evidence, the pictures of all of these demonic forces. There's one picture there of Darth Vader, but, well, if anybody else saw Star Wars movies, but I understand that Darth Vader did not come from the movie. This is the National Cathedral, and the one that you saw in Star Wars was a replica of what you're seeing at the National Cathedral, simply chiseled there in stone.
They did. They have gargoyles, devils, horn devils, way up on the ledges, and most people don't even notice these things. They just walk on into the National Cathedral, which is a huge Gothic cathedral. They're in Washington, D.C. And again, the land itself was set aside for a national cathedral from the very beginning by the designer of the street layout in the city, a man named Pierre Lafont. Oh, maybe in a later program we can talk about Mr. Lafont. But it's interesting that America would even have a national cathedral. And then to think that the most recent addition to the Gargoyle Devils up on the ledges in stone looking down on people, if you can imagine that they have some kind of a strange interior life, is Darth Vader. But it makes sense if we know the Bible. And this, again, I believe, Dr. Stan, is the power of God over the devil and his people, because God told us about such things in his word. This is the power. You know, so this is the reason that these things don't scare me, but we... Even the Apostle Paul said, we as Christians are not ignorant of the devices of the devil. And I think that's why people do need mysterious monuments, so that they won't be ignorant and they won't be frightened, because God forewarned us. In the book of Daniel, the prophet says the last day's world ruler would not worship the God of his fathers, but instead would worship the God of forces.
Right.
Now we have Darth Vader, and remember that old Star Wars motto there, may the Force be with you. And that's the reason, I believe, for Darth Vader there.
And it's just an amazing similar. Well, it's not similarity. This is what it was designed after. I mean, you look at the Darth Vader in the movie, and then you realize that, of course, it comes from our National Cathedral. What's it doing in the National Cathedral? It reflects this eternal battle between God and Satan. Only, of course, here, Satan is on the throne. Well, Tex, let's go ahead and get, before we get too far along, let's go ahead and get out your website so people will know they can get your material. Because Tex does tremendous research on many things. He's a prolific writer. How can people get to your website?
Sure. Just go to powerofprophecy.com. And by the way, they can read our article on mysterious monuments, and then they can, if they're interested, I believe they will be, I think they'll be led to come back to you and to your phone number there and order the book from Dr. Stan Monteith and your Liberty program. But we have an article about mysterious monuments and some of the pictures and so forth on our website, powerofprophecy.com. If folks would like a free newsletter, all they have to do is call us during the workday. That toll-free number would be 1-800-234-9673 and say, hey, I heard it on Dr. Stan's program, and I'd like a free copy of your newsletter. We'd be glad to send it. We won't ask them to buy a thing, I promise.
All right, fine. Well, of course, Tex has a lot of, he's written a number of books, and we carry certain of these books because I think they're vitally important to understand the true nature of the spiritual battle we're involved in. Our battle has nothing to do with Georgia. It has nothing to do with Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan. We're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and certainly now, of course, a national, international a battlefield. And, of course, our men are out there fighting and dying, but they don't understand that behind the forces, of course, are these powerful spiritual forces, truly supernatural forces. It's not imaginary. And once you, of course, see the pictures of this, this book is a... I'll tell you, Tex, I've always wanted to write this book, but I never got around to it. However, I appreciate so much your doing it. Well, hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. We do have a call from Herman from Carmel, and we'll take that, and then, of course, we'll wrap up the program. It's certainly gone in a very, 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 very rapid. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Hey, well, Herman, how are you tonight?
Excellent. Quick question. Richard Hoagland has written a book called Monuments on Mars. Do you believe there are possible monuments or of ancient structures on Mars? And could these have any relation to the monuments on Earth and the same people or entities creating them?
All right. Do you have any thoughts on that, Tex?
You know, Herman, I believe that there may very well be monuments on Mars. You know, Hoagland showed that face, you know, that was found, and many people believe that is was a monument, the great face that was lying there in the dust that appeared to come from a monument. More recently, you know, the craft that they sent on Mars unveiled what appears to be a goddess statue. By the way, I have pictures of those things in my book, Mysterious Monuments. But I'm not real dogmatic about it. And, of course, NASA always, the space agency, always, as you know, Herman and Dr. Stan, they're always trying to put that down and try to keep the supernatural out of the discussion. But I don't see why that would not be possible because, you know, extraterrestrial life and such. And it's interesting that in all of the secret societies, they all have these legends and tales, which they believe to be true, that these beings, these, well, let's just call them aliens or ETs, will come back to Earth, that were once here, these gods from outer space. Now, I believe that's demon powers. But so they have these tales and these stories. So I think it's very possible, yes.
All right, fine. Well, let's see. We've got Rory calling from Los Banos. Hi, Rory. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. In June, I was in Stanford Hospital here in Northern California for 9 days after a pretty bad injury I was in. And I was laying there in my hospital bed. I noticed that the walls, the outside walls surrounding Stanford Hospital are, there's swastikas built into the a pattern, geometric pattern, all through the outside walls. And once someone points it out, it's very obvious. But
isn't that amazing? You never see them until somebody points them out. They're hidden in plain sight.
Hidden in plain sight, but they are definitely there. And I was just amazed about.
Well, we're almost out of time. Tex, would you like to comment briefly on that? Because you have a lot of pictures of swastikas in your book.
Oh, sure. And, of course, yeah, I actually showed two buildings, pictures of two buildings here in America. One there at the Naval Air Station, Coronado, in California, and another one in Decatur, Alabama. Actually, buildings designed as swastikas. And as you know, Dr. Stan, that is an ancient symbol of the sun god.
Amen to that. Hey, we're out of time.
All right.
Well, anyway, our guest this evening, of course, has been Tex Mars. Tex, thanks very much for being with us. And of course, I hope people will be interested in getting your book, Mysterious Monuments, fascinating material. God bless, and thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's been a great honor and privilege being with you.
It's always fun. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, of course, this was Tex Mars, and certainly he's done a tremendous job on this mysterious monument. We carry one or two of the other books that he's written. He's a prolific writer and does a lot of great research. And Well, anyway, of course, certainly we actually have a DVD that we carry called the Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. It's a very professionally done DVD. It's a sequel to Secret Mysteries, the Secret History, or pardon me, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. It's a very, very professionally done DVD. I happen to appear just for a moment or two in both of them, reiterating my belief that there were two forces here when America was created. One was the occult, the other was the Christian. Unfortunately, today the occult is in total working control and it is using the military and financial power of the United States to bring about a one-world government. Why do you think we have troops stationed in 130 nations throughout the world? Why do you think we spend more money on our military than all the rest of the nations of the world combined? Because we are building an empire. But the empire is, of course, for the other god and for the other ruler. I must understand that. And, of course, the people of great wealth who've given themselves over to the dark side. And, of course, that's how you get tremendous wealth. You join the other side. But, of course, at the price of your eternal soul. Well, certainly, if you're interested in getting Texas' book, The Mysterious Monuments, we've ordered it. We'll have that very shortly. If you're interested in getting these two DVDs, which I think is so vitally important, one is called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, but if you want to get into the secret architecture of our nation's capital, it's called Riddles in Stone. That's Riddles in Stone. There is a book, actually, written on the secret architecture of our nation's capital. I think it's out of print now. We sold it for some years. But the information is all there. And, of course, much of that is included in this DVD. Very professionally done. And you'll actually see these sites. And many of them, of course, you'd never have an opportunity to see. Fortunately, one of the guards there in Washington, D.C., knew that our friend Chris Pinto was trying to get in there. They wouldn't let him in with a camera. And so one weekend, the guard, who was a Christian, took him around and let him see all of these spots. And you will see the pictures, the statues of the occult leaders of the world, embellishing our the Library of Congress and other buildings, of course. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, who are involved in a spiritual battle, they hide their emblems in plain sight. We have actually, books on the cult of the all-seeing eye. The emblem on the back of the dollar bill, what's it doing there? My talk entitled, The Secrets of the Illuminati. It's a talk we gave for the Prophecy Club. We'll actually see many of their emblems there. This has a lot of material in it. It's basically the story of the Brotherhood of Darkness, but much longer with so many of their documents. You'll actually see them projected on the screen. That's the Secrets of the Illuminati. But it is the story of the Brotherhood of Darkness. The people who really run the world today. Not imaginary, very real. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America is under attack, but not from without, from within, by these dark spiritual forces that work through men. And if you doubt that there really is a conspiracy out there, if you get any of our other items, simply ask for a copy of the pamphlet. It's entitled the Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy. The Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy. It's a treatise that was channeled by a demonic spirit to Alice Bailey 50 years ago. And it tells you exactly what's going on since we started talking about it. Of course, they don't offer it anymore, but we have it. We offer it for them. We want you to understand what is going on. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And it's your job to get informed, to help us to get the truth out. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of Barry Samish, who's an Israeli patriot and citizen who was forced to leave Israel because, of course, of the threats on his life. He came to America, and we're, of course, pleased to have him here as a regular guest on Radio Liberty. He's only going to be with us one evening this week, and so tonight's the night. But, of course, you know, certainly within a few weeks ago, all of our attention was focused on what's going on in the Middle East. Is there going to be a war with Iran? What's going to happen as far as Iraq and Afghanistan is concerned? And then what's going to happen to Israel? Because, of course, there's no way that Israel could survive an attack of maybe 100,000 rockets would be coming in on Israel if there was a war with Iran and Syria and Hezbollah and Hamas. And of course, but now suddenly we're talking about the war in the Caucasus. Isn't it amazing how everything can change just in a relatively few days? And, of course, the war there in Eurasia, certainly, and of course most people don't understand that this was not precipitated by Russia. This was a pro-Russian, a province there in Georgia, and there were some Russian troops there. And certainly then, of course, it was attacked by the American-trained and Israeli-trained troops that were there, stationed there, and by the mercenaries hired by our government there. And so they launched the attack on a area that was occupied by the Russians, and then the Russians counterattacked, and now how terrible the Russians are that they counterattacked, and we don't know how many people have been killed over there, but the people are simply pawns in this incredible game. And tragically, it is a game, but human lives are lost, and as hundreds of thousands have been lost in Iraq, and probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of several hundred thousand in Afghanistan, are these continuing wars, perpetual war, to bring about perpetual peace. Well, Barry, that is the background. Barry, you pick up the story. What do you think the important issues are this week?
Well, there was only one show, when I have two or three shows, I prepare well for two or three shows, but I had one, so I looked over the news, and people I know well were in the news all week long. One friend I don't know about friend, but he was certainly a journalistic compatriot of sorts. Yecheskiel was his name, Chadok. He interviewed me for a couple of hours once. He was injured in Georgia. He was brought back to Israel in stable but critical conditions. So I thought I'd mention him just as someone I knew. But then it got very, very serious with people I knew well who are now right in the heart of the news, and I'm going to do two little stories, a little complicated, not for me. I know these people like back my hand, but there's going to be a lot of names that you don't know, but I'll sort it out and make it easy. Now, the first issue is one that I've mentioned on the show a couple of times. There were these two brothers, their last name is Kalamish, and they were, their settlement, they were working for the army in security. A settlement in Gush Etzion was suddenly a camping ground for 20 Bedouin. They went to shoo them away.
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just a moment here.
Right.
All right, Barry, you go ahead and pick up the story there. These were some Bedouins. These were people in the military, weren't they?
Yeah, well, they were accused of shooting in the air at the Bedouins. They actually didn't shoot their rifles. The police actually took their rifles and shot them they were set up. Okay, I could go through the whole situation that they were there as security guards to get rid of these 20 Bedouins and camped outside of a dormitory, an actual school dormitory.
And where was this in? Was this in Israel? Whereabouts was the dormitory?
Gush Etzion.
All right. Okay.
It's about 9 miles from Jerusalem.
All right. Fine. So it's a town. It's a Jewish town.
Well, the town was Kochav Shachar, I believe, but it was a settlement 9 miles from Jerusalem.
Okay. Fine. And they, were these professional security guards then?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, they're in jail. They were rounded up and they were framed. And they had a trial that wasn't a trial. These people were only doing their duty as they were trained by the army. They did not shoot their rifles. The Bedouin lied. And the story was that my lawyer, Dov Evanor, the one who suggested I get out of Israel in a hurry because I was being set up, is the lawyer for the Kalamish brothers. And I, you gotta pity them. I'll tell you, they haven't got a chance. From my experience, by the way, I never win in court in Israel. Never. No matter how just, my case, if you are outside, the mainline thinking of labor Zionism, they eliminate you. At first they'll try and ignore you. But if you become a little too influential, they will try and expel you. If that doesn't work, they will eliminate you. It's a nasty situation with labor Zionism. We've spoken about this many times. But the Kalamish brothers it was just kangaroo court into prison. The two of them got 9 months for literally doing their job. And it occurred to me, we spoke about this.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're going to have to bring our stations back on board here and let hear the entire sequence and realize the importance of this story right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is telling about the story of these two brothers, and they were hired as security guards. They'd been trained by the military. There were about 20 Bedouins right very close to the city, and they were asked to leave, and the Bedouins wouldn't leave. Now, did these guards carrying guns, did they banish their guns? What actually happened?
Absolutely nothing. That's the strange part of it all. All reports that I've read say they did not even shoot the air. They were there just to, they showed their rifles, and they made it clear that Bedouin were encamped illegally, but that's it. The Bedouin claimed that they shot the air, the Bedouin lied in court, and they were thrown into jail. All of this, I realize, was a setup, because last week a policeman opened his mouth and said that the police were working with the Bedouin to get the Jews arrested and thrown out of Judea and Samaria.
This then has to do with this whole idea that the people in government want to force the Jews, what, maybe 20,000-30,000 of them, living in settlements in Judea and Samaria out of their homes.
300,000.
300,000 out of their homes and force them, of course, to become homeless people in their own homeland. So, and of course, it's very similar to what we saw here in the United States with a couple of the border guards were set up and prosecuted and thrown in prison for long periods of time for a crime they did not commit. I mean, certainly they thought one of the a drug smuggler was had a gun and was going to shoot at them. They shot him. They shot him in the buttocks. And, of course, he escaped. But the government wanted to make an example out of him, so none of our other border guards would enforce the law. And they said these two border guards to prison for 10 years for wounding a drug smuggler. They gave him immunity. They gave him medical care. They've allowed him to continue smuggling drugs. I think they finally, of course, they had to clamp down on him after several more arrests after this incident. But they're doing the same thing to the guards over there in Israel. And the question is, why are they doing that? Really to intimidate the other people trying to do their job to protect the lives of the Jewish settlers?
Of course, of course. What border guard, what security officer will intervene in any instance if you go to jail for doing your job? And that's what happened. They were kangaroo courted into jail. Now, their lawyer, I know very well. He was my lawyer. His name was Dov Evanor, and he appealed to the president to pardon them. Now, the president is Shimon Peres, and why even bother? But that's what he did. He appealed for a presidential pardon, and Peres turned it down. Now, a little background. This is going to be a kind of a different story, a little more personal. Dov Evanor was, when I was in the hospital, he was there daily, and he was the one dealing with the police about my car accident, and he was saying that the police won't tell my own lawyers who had hit me. He says the whole thing stinks. There's something wrong here. I think you were supposed to get killed. I would leave the country if I were you. That was my lawyer, Dov Evanor. But I want to talk a little about infiltration, because while the Gush Katif Jews were being threatened with evacuation, I would talk to Dov on the phone about my particular cases, and he would be more pro-government than the government. Get the Jews out of Gaza, we won't have to do a reserve duty anymore, the country will be safer. And I never understood how a supposedly right-wing, nationalist, patriotic attorney was defying all the right-wing, nationalist, patriotic Jews. We were all trying to save Gush Katif from this action.
And for our listeners, of course, you're speaking now of Gaza. Go
yes,
ahead.
Yes, of course. And to this day, I always felt there was something very wrong with my attorney just over the issue of Gaza. It was extremely, very, very hard to explain his attitude that he wants the Jews removed from Gush Katif. Now, when I read about the Chalamish brothers and that he was their attorney and that he appealed to the president, I said, that's it. They don't have a chance. He's there to make sure they don't have a chance. The Chalamish brothers were set up. The Bedouin were placed there on purpose. This whole thing was just one giant piece of our police working with the Bedouin to make sure that the security apparatus in Judea and Samaria is completely struck down. And no security guard in the future is going to intervene on anything. You get thrown into jail for doing it now.
Well, of course, Barry, certainly I'm sure it's as true over in Israel as it is here, that the conservative movement, the patriotic movement in the United States is thoroughly infiltrated. But you see this all throughout the world, certainly in Ireland, where you had the Irish Republican Army. It turned out, you know, because the Irish Republican Army is killing people. It's killing British citizens up there in Northern Ireland with bombing London. It turned out the number two man in the Irish Republican Army was a British government plant. The chief torturer, a separate job, he actually killed people who were accused of infiltrating the IRA. He was also working for British intelligence. People don't understand. You always want a controlled opposition. Sounds like you have the same trouble over there in Israel.
Oh, I'm talking right now. Everything is infiltrated. The entire right religious opposition to Israel is thoroughly infiltrated. And I speak of from really hard experience. I'll give you another example. My last really great protest, and it should have been a great protest, was at Rabin's 10th anniversary memorial service in Tel Aviv. Bill Clinton was there giving a crappy speech. The world's media was there, and I said, this is the time that we have to go out to the streets, and we have to make a fuss in front of the world's cameras, and get the Rabin issue finally solved. Now, Dov Evanor was now part of the Rabin gang, and I'll explain what they are very shortly. I didn't work alone. I had a committee initially based around my research, but their egoism and just destroyed everything along with the infiltration. Well, before that rally, Dov Evanor held his own conference at the press center in Tel Aviv, where instead of people rallying around what I was trying to do, getting them into the streets, in the end I only got a dozen of the bravest Israelis there were, and we did our best. You can see it on my website. You can actually see me on the streets. It was filmed, and you can see what I was doing. I was facing 100,000 potential enemies. It was 100,000 against 12. And it was really one of the bravest things I've ever done in my life, and it actually worked. But Dov Evanor did what he could to make sure it didn't work by holding a conference 2 days before the event, where he took the steam and the anger and he took in the Shabak. The Israeli Secret Services showed up at his little conference in the name of Yigal Amir, that's the patsy who was in prison for killing Rabin. His wife, so-called wife, Larissa Trembobler, showed up. His sister showed up. His brother showed up. The entire Shabak Secret Service showed up. It was a fiasco, and it was all moderated by my attorney, Dov Evanor. In other words, I lost in court time and time again because I was never, ever going to face justice. My attorneys were actually prepared for me by the Israeli Secret Service. Avdov, I actually believe that, in fact, getting me out of Israel was one of his duties. Making sure that my rally in Tel Aviv didn't go properly was one of his duties. Whether he was doing it deliberately or for the Secret Service, and honest to goodness, more and more I think Secret Service, he was the lawyer for the Kalamish brothers. He appealed to the president of Israel, the one who murdered Rabin Shimon Peres, and lo and behold, the Kalamish brothers were not pardoned and will have to sit out their term in prison. We have a lot in common, me and them, and they don't know it. But that's the first thing I noticed. But I want to...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Right.
No, right here. We got one more minute. Go ahead.
Oh, boy.
Well, I've seen this same sort of thing happen here. Certainly the people who... the lawyers who offered to certainly to represent the people of... the Branch Davidian families that lost their loved ones there and the seeds. Actually, of course, this was a special operations where special Delta Force people were brought in and they actually killed the women and the children, even unintentionally. But it doesn't matter. You drop a bomb in where a lot of people are and you kill them. They're just as dead, and you're responsible. And then, of course, so many of the Davidians were shot in the back of the head. You've never heard about that. You've never, of course, seen the videos that Waco, the Rules of Engagement, or Waco, the New Revelation. But, of course, then the people who were representing the families were actually on the other side. They were government plants to represent the families against the government. That's how the game is played here, played the same way in Israel. Go ahead. Okay, Barry, go right ahead.
All right. Now, I'm going to mention a hero. a man I like very much. Now, we started to talk about the Rabin Committee. There was an actual committee to reinvestigate the Rabin murder. And we spoke at a couple of conferences together, and I'll explain that. But first I want to introduce someone I like very much. It was Professor Hillel Weiss of Bar-Ilan University. And unlike the rest of the committee, he didn't really know about the murder or the details, but he went on TV and he gave me legitimacy like no one else ever did. There was a show about the Rabin murder. I believe this was on the 7th anniversary or even before that, 5th anniversary. And you had all these members of the Knesset, including Peres's close buddy, Dalia Yitzhak. And everyone is defaming me. I mean, right on national TV. They're all defaming me for my book and for the stupidity of these people who believe in conspiracies and terrible name-calling. And Hillel Weiss, the only professor from the sort of opposition, was asked a question. He gave an answer that was not in line with everybody else's, that Chalmers is not so crazy, and he's written a good book. And the moderator turned to him and said, "Then you believe there was a conspiracy to kill Yitzhak Rabin?" And everyone expected him to say, "No, no, no, Chalmers wrote a good book. I didn't mean that." He said, "Yes, Rabin was killed in a conspiracy. Chalmers is right." And gasping, this was on national TV. I couldn't believe it. I was watching this from my home, and I could not believe he did that. And this is a major professor, a tremendous intellectual, and he was the first one to come out on a national forum and defend me and say I was right. So I have a great deal of tremendous feeling for Dr. Weiss in my heart, and he, this week, was indicted. Okay? Now, I'll give you the reason why he's indicted. It's a terrible thing. During the evacuation of... In 2007, Hebron was evacuated in part. The residents there, the Jewish residents, bought a building. They paid for it. It was legal. And the army came and evacuated them. And he was there, and he shouted at the IDF colonel, Yehuda Fuchs was his name, and he said, "We're going to put you on trial just like at Nuremberg." He said this on national TV. He was indicted for that, for threatening a law officer of the State of Israel, and you could go to jail for, you know, he'll get another year for that. If they hit him hard, he'll be like the Kalamish brothers. And the first thing is, why can't a professor say what he wants without being indicted? But I told you, they eliminate, if you can't be ignored, they will get...
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stanberry. He was just telling us about a professor over in Israel who was asked on a national television if he thought that Barry Shamish was right, that there was a conspiracy behind the murder of Yitzhak Rabin. This professor said, yes, he thought that Barry Shamish was right. Of course, I think that we've established, and Barry's fairly well established, there was a conspiracy behind the murder of Rabin. Just as here in America, there was a conspiracy behind the murder of Jack Kennedy, of his brother Bobby Kennedy, of Martin Luther King. If you haven't seen our material on those all those murders, fine. We'd be glad they're available through Radio Liberty. But, of course, now this professor over in Israel, who had the courage to speak out and say the truth about Rabin, that there's all sorts of evidence that there was a conspiracy behind his murder. Now he is being indicted because he had in public criticized a fellow police officer, and said, he ought to be indicted for, working to force the Jews to leave Gaza. But pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, I want to talk about this Rabin committee, which was deeply, deeply infiltrated. And I want to talk about the good guys on this committee. There was Hillel Weiss, Professor Weiss, who I'm going to defend next time I write. I'm going to defend him. He's someone I like very much. And, well, there was the great journalist Adir Zeek, who suddenly got throat cancer and died within 4 months. Just suddenly, and I'm not kidding you, suddenly, out of nowhere, he had cancer, then he was dead, and he knew it was murder, and he told me. He said the Mossad knows how to kill people, and he gave me examples. He's dead. Weiss is now indicted. There was me. I'm in the States because there were attempts to eliminate me, finally. There was how could I forget his last name?
We'll just call him Ari. Go ahead.
Gallen. I just got a note from him. And he said he's in New York, and he's just got to take some time off from the country. It was too much for him. In other words, they really got rid of the effective members of this committee. They killed us. They almost killed us, indicted us, or they expelled us. But they got rid of all of us. It's not like I'm all alone in this world. Hillel Weiss said that I'm not afraid to go to prison anymore. I don't respect our government, and I don't consider it a just imprisonment. He said the right things. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this committee. Ari Gallen organized the conferences that really opened up the Rabin assassination to Israel, because at one conference, the speakers, and I don't want to confuse you with names yet, but I'm going to mention names. We were all on the front page of Yediot Achronot's weekend magazine. That's the biggest publicity you could get in Israel. We were on the front cover, dancing on the grave of Rabin. That's what they turned to. 7 pages of doctors and professors, all of us danced, sucking the blood of Rabin and dancing on his grave, and we were going to sue them. We had a meeting. This was not just libel. I mean, it was atrocious what they did. But it also opened up the whole Rabin murder to Israel. In a huge way, there's no equivalent in America of a Yediot Achronot. Even the New York Times or USA Today cannot do what Yediot Achronot can do. Most of the country read it on the weekend, and we were in the weekend magazine. The whole country was talking about these professors and doctors who believe Rabin was murdered in a conspiracy. So we had a meeting. Whoops, I hear music.
You hear some music? And what happened when you had the meeting?
Well, I'm going to mention one other person for now, head of the cardiac department of Kaplan Hospital, Dr. David Chen, was one of the doctors smeared in the article.
Go ahead, and what? So, were you? Did you try to bring a lawsuit against this publication?
Well, I hear music. I am so paranoid with the music. Did I hear music?
You hear music? Yeah. Oh, don't you worry. We'll just cut this off. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry. And Barry's, of course, giving some of his experiences over in Israel, trying to educate the Israeli people. There is a an organized effort to silence anybody who questioned who it was that killed the Prime Minister. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You go right ahead. Pick the story up there.
Now, David Chen, I believe it was head of the cardiac department, certainly head of a major department of a major hospital, was suddenly on our side, and he seemed like a very nice guy, but he was doing horrific damage to our cause by proving that Rabin was shot with the wrong kinds of bullets, but also dismissing the evidence of everyone, not just me. There were other people who wrote books. Believe it or not, there was a kind of competition to see who could get more famous over uncovering Rabin. I was not alone. I was just the first and best known. But there were five or six other books that backed my conclusions and added new facts, and I review them in my books. I give everyone their due. And what Ken was claiming was Rabin was, in fact, shot twice. And everyone else was wrong. The whole business that there was a third shot from the front that shattered his backbone, he came up with these asinine conclusions that the bullet went flying through the air and did a 180-degree turn and came back, and it was, and this is publicly in conventions, he was making a mockery of everyone else. Now, I mention that right now because I'm going to mention another attorney. Her name is Nitzana Darshan Leitner. Now, she was my attorney when someone named Ophir Pinas, that's, by the way, his name in Hebrew, let him live with it, Ophir Pinas, gets up on the, he's a member of the Knesset, very, very close to Peres, from the podium of the Knesset in the year 2000, he orders all bookshops in Israel not to sell my book. If you can imagine this.
Well, I think that's a real tribute to you, Barry. After all, if it was that you had a great deal of truth there, they wouldn't try to silence it. They wouldn't try to consider it.
I can't thank him enough. He turned my book into a bestseller in a day. The next week, I was number three on the Yediot best-selling list.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Barry was just saying that, of course, one of the members very, very close to key people in government had got up at Knesset and told people not to buy Barry Savage's book on the assassination of Rabin. Well, of course, there's nothing to make a book more popular and people want to read it than to be told not to buy this book, not to read this book. It's a terrible book by somebody in a position of authority, and so suddenly the book gets great popularity, and it's a number three there is a bestseller there in Israel for a time. So before we go on, Barry, I do want you to get your website out. I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your DVDs and how they can get your book. Go right ahead, and then we'll go back to the story.
And continue with Penis just briefly. If you want a bestseller, you've got to get your book banned. There's nothing better for sales than having your book banned. And that's what he did. He banned my book from the bookstores, and there was a huge controversy, and the bookstores were actually pressured into selling the book again. But to get this book, by the way, Who Murdered Yitzhak Rabin, you go to www.lulu.com. That's lulu.com. In the right-hand corner, it says search. There's a little box. You write in my name, Chamish. That's Chamish, and you'll get the Who Murdered Rabin. Don't get the color one. That's $80. Get the black and white one. That's $20. People have made that mistake. You get the cheap one in black and white, they murder you in color. My website is BarryChamish.com. And if you want my DVD, Who Murdered Yitzhak Rabin, which I recorded a year and a half ago in Salt Lake City again, just phone me up. And the number is 904-315-8079. That's 904-315-8079.
All right, very good.
Now, back we go.
Okay.
So I sue Ofer Pinas. And my attorney is, her name is Nitzana Darshan-Leitner. She handles, she doesn't win cases. She handles cases in order to lose cases. She's the attorney for Jonathan Pollard, for instance. But let's not dive into that. So I sue Pinas, and in the first session, I win a victory, because the judge removed his parliamentary immunity. In Israel, if you sit the Knesset, there's a law that says you can't be sued. And the judge removed his immunity, and he was going to be sued like any other citizen. But then one morning, I get a phone call from Nitzana. She says, get to the court. We're in big trouble. Get in your car and get to the court right now. So I rush over. She says, tell the judge why you're suing. And I did. I said that someone could take someone's business, his income, ban sales of my book is affecting my income, and I gave the whole speech that I don't care if he's a member of the Knesset or not. You don't cut into somebody's
livelihood
like this. And next thing I know, the judge rules against me and gives me an option. I'll have to put 10,000 shekels down. Money I did not have, by the way, okay, in order to continue the case, and I will lose the $10,000 if he rules against me. And I go outside with the senator. I said, I don't have $10,000 to put down on the table like this. What's the option? She says, you'll lose, but we'll make the terms easy. Next thing I know, I'm giving 1,000 shekels to the Institute for the Blind, and all the papers have that Chavis lost to Pinas and is giving money to the Institute for the Blind. It took 2 years before someone who knew the law said that Nitzana deliberately made me lose. Deliberately. She said the advice, he said the advice she gave me was completely wrong, and she set me up to lose. But I did not know that. I should have suspected it. There were a lot of reasons to suspect it. She was a religious woman living in a religious community who showed her legs and showed her cleavage, and she did things that were not religious, and I didn't know this at the time. So back we go to the committee to reinvestigate the murder of Rabin. I suggested to them that they use my lawyer, Nitzana Darshan-Leitner. All right, I'm an idiot. All right, what are you supposed to do? You take on people, you trust them, and you hope for the best. You don't know they're working for someone else. And in Israel, it's so spooky. It's so spooky how much infiltration there is in that country. But I suggested Nitzana, and now we go back to Dr. David Chen of Kaplan Hospital, who has this wacky theory that Rabin was in fact shot twice, but Amir couldn't have done it because of the composition of the bullets, which is so irrelevant compared to my book and my speeches and my years of research it was such a dopey argument. But as I told you, there was jealousy of my so-called success. And believe me, it was not such hot success. There were prices to be paid for the success, but I was well known. And the Santa becomes the lawyer, and she writes this god-awful suit, all based on Dr. David Hen's wacko theory. It's the magic bullet theory of Israel. The bullet stopped at the right shoulder, and it turned 180 degrees, and then it went back into the lung. He was the Arlen Specter of Israel. Magic bullets and all. And when she wrote that awful, awful suit, I refused outright to endorse it. I walked out of this organization, and I wrote about it. I said, this woman is doing everything possible to make us lose. And by the way, I invited her to a lecture, to take notes, gave her the videos, the book. She threw it all out and based the suit on nonsense. Now, at that point, I knew she had to be thrown out. I said, I don't care. And she was paid well, too. She was well paid for this horrible suit. And I said, you've got to get rid of her. She's working for the government. Which, by the way, I will tell you right now, she has admitted to it. All right, I'm gonna do this little story as well. One of the reasons, Aria Gallen of the Rutenbrand Society, who organized the Rabin conferences, and was now in New York discussing with Israel, and just needs a rest from all the corruption. He and I noted that the Sana, shortly after she ruined our suit, where we were not only going to expose the Rabin assassination in court, we were going to make the biggest country in the paper apologize to us. How she prevented that, Nitzana advertised that she was organizing her own conferences with the help and aid of the Secret Service, the Shabak. In her conferences, the guest lecturers were going to be from the Shabak. And when I showed that to Ari, he was just so appalled. Just so deeply appalled that this woman working with Shabak had anything to do with us. And she ruined the suit. She ruined our opportunity to actually break through with Rabin. And you have to understand, Rabin was the only issue that could have stopped the insanity going on in Israel today. It was the only one. It was the only one, only uniting issue there was. Now, if you don't know Jews like I know Jews, and believe it or not, I'm proud to be one, but nonetheless, the egoism of the Jews is simply impossible to understand unless you know it from up close. The right wing and the religious, and in fact anyone opposed to Oslo and opposed, well, to most of Israel today, is utterly opposed to the corruption of its government. Anyone opposed to them could not unite on one issue. Everyone had their own issue. And everyone was fighting for a little newspaper space and a little publicity. You could not get the Jews to work together. It was impossible. There was just this matter of personal egoism and desire for fame and recognition, there was just no way of doing it. The one issue that everyone agreed on, well, enough people agreed on, the most people agreed on, was that the Rabin murder was in fact a conspiracy. And we had a chance with if our lawyer was not Nichana Darshan Leitner, we could have gone to court, and we could have, we might have had a chance to blow the cap on the horrible corruption that's eating Israel apart today. But we were infiltrated.
Well, Barry, I hate to tell you this, but the whole conservative movement here is infiltrated in the United States. The communist movement, the mafia, the Aryan Brotherhood, the militia, they're all infiltrated. You always want to control the opposition. And what better way to do it than to control Barry Shamus's lawyer? Now, I don't know, I certainly don't know anything at all about it, but I take your word that this is the sort of thing that we know happens here in the United States. I've seen time and time again get lawyers in to defend conservatives. We're there to throw the cases.
You know, I'm not going to say that the next person, he's a professor of botany at Ben-Gurion University. He was the moderator at the conspiracy conferences. There were four or five of them. By the end, he was inviting crackpots to give wacko theories. One guy, his theory was that Rabin was accidentally shot by the blank bullets, that the blank bullets killed him by accident. So they had to, then everything followed by the accidental shooting. All of this stuff was doing terrible harm because, first of all, you don't want everyone to have their own theory, no matter how wacky. It's not a game where you come up with the stupidest theory and get points for coming up with a great theory. Ari Zaritsky, the professor of botany, actually got me to walk out of the last conference, and it was a crowded conference, at the press center in Jerusalem. It was wall to wall, people against the wall, listening to these, Dr. Ken saying there were only two bullets, and Dr. Bakken saying that Rabin was, accidentally killed by the blank bullets. I walked out. I went to a bar across the street with my companion, and I wouldn't go back in there. Finally, time was running out, and I actually had so many people everyone stayed to hear me. They were all there to hear me. They put up with the other stuff, but they wanted to hear me. I actually had to go to the building security, get the room rented for another hour, and I actually gave my speech. Nobody was there to hear anyone else but me. And what can you do? The moderator tried to get me not to show up and almost did it.
Well, Barry, they use these same techniques over and over again. And as long as you recognize them, and they use them in Israel, they will use them here in the United States, until we understand that certainly the Communist Party in the United States was thoroughly infiltrated with FBI agents. So is the mafia. And you go into the background of the story of Whitey Bulger and other people. The mafia infiltrated, and many times even financed, at least in part, by the by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Aryan Brotherhood, the anti-Semitic movement, the patriotic movement. They're all infiltrated from the other side, controlled opposition. So, at least you recognize what was happening over in Israel, and hopefully some of our listeners here will begin to understand that this is how the game is played. They're so far ahead of us. They always want to control the opposition, and so maybe they couldn't control you, but they could control the people who represented you. So pick the story up.
Well, this week there was a poll in Israel done by the Kivon Research Center. I don't know who they are, but it was widely quoted, and I guess somebody paid for it. But it's an important poll because they asked Israelis, what is the most dangerous phenomenon to Israel? Now, normally, of course, it's the Arabs fighting Israel, hands down, which is the most dangerous issue facing Israel. But this year was different. There was a tie for first place. 24% said the Arabs. And believe me, that figure in other days would have been 80%. But 24% said it was government corruption that was the greatest danger facing Israel right now. You've got a situation where the number tied for number one right now is the government's filthy mafia mentality and behavior. Most Israelis, not most, number one choice for what's going to bring down Israel is corruption from its leaders.
Well, of course, but you're disillusioned people as far as their leadership is concerned. They don't know where to turn. I'm sure you've got a lot of good people over there. It's just that they're not positions of leadership, and if they are, they'll do everything to drive them out of the country or to discredit them as they have with you. So you should be flattered, if nothing else, to realize that you were being effective. You were being so effective, they had to get you out of the country.
They drove me crazy. Let me tell you, they did that.
All right, you hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Barry Shamish, certainly a man who's given his life to try to preserve the country he loves, which is Israel. Well, Barry, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, what I didn't do today, and I'm sitting here with notes about the past week, as I always do, but this was an opportunity to let you know from inside Israel, you can't do anything about anything. This is something people don't understand, that the labor Zionists will not put up with opposition. And they're, I don't know how they get the power to run the secret police, but once you have that power, the ordinary citizen is in a terrible bind. My friend Professor Hillel Weiss is going to court. And I'm telling you, I have been in Israeli courtrooms and I've seen how it's done. No matter how decent his motives and how legal his actions, he's going to lose. And I'm going to lose one of the good guys in the Rabin movement. I'll bet you anything he gets prison, like the Kalamish brothers, who were set up by Bedouins working hand-in-hand with Israeli police against Jews. That's the situation in Israel today. It is incredibly, incredibly hopeless for someone who wants to save the country through goodness and decency. There's just too much under the ground, and there are just too many people who you think are on your side, that over time it becomes very, very clear that they're not on your side at all. They're there to control your behavior and make sure that you don't get too popular. That's what they're there for. They act like your friend, and at times they even appear to be helping you, but in the end they're chopping you up and making sure that you are ineffective. That's, I think, what I was talking. You know, I might repeat this lecture next week if you'll give me the chance.
All right, fine. Well, we'll have to see how the programs are lining up next week. We were way part of this week, so we ended up with a really full week, but we'll be in touch with you next week.
No. Next week is a long ways off. It can be next month.
All right, we'll be talking to you anyway real soon, but I want to thank you so much for being with us, Barry, and don't despair. I really believe, of course, that we're never going to win this battle on our own. I believe, of course, we're doing what's right, and in God's eyes, God will intervene, because this is God's battle. You and I and many of the other patriots in Israel and America are simply, hopefully, doing God's bidding. Hey, we're out of time. God bless. Good night, Barry.
Thank you all. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and just think it's interesting to note the similarity between what's going on over in Israel and how the conservative, traditionalist movement there, the one who wants to save Israel, their movement's infiltrated, just like the movement here, whether it's our religious movement, whether it's conservative political movement, whether it's a Republican movement, they're all infiltrated. And when you understand that, so much of what goes on really makes sense. If you're interested, of course, in knowing what happened at Waco, We do have two wonderful DVDs. One's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement. But the other, the second one is called Waco, A New Revelation. That's Waco, A New Revelation. We have it. We want you to get it. We want you to understand who it was who killed the women and the children. And the fact you've never heard these stories, the fact that the FBI, a man in charge of what happened there, said this is a murder investigation, an open murder investigation, because the Davidians were murdered. And they were murdered probably, certainly by people from a Delta Force unit who were simply carrying out their jobs, but who gave them the order to kill the Davidians and the women and their children? Well, of course, you certainly want to see the DVDs. Waco, A New Revelation, but if you're only going to get one, get Waco, The Rules of Engagement. We think it's vitally important. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and look at the things that we have. If you want to understand, certainly, the spiritual forces which are at work behind the scenes, you want to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, my talk on the Forbidden Secret, my talk on the secret knowledge, and of course there's a syllabus that goes with the Forbidden Secret, and you need to understand how this carries over to what's going on in the United States. And when the President gives his inaugural addresses, the hidden messages are there. Have you ever wondered who the angel is who rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm that George Bush referred to not once but twice in his first inaugural address? The angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. What's this storm he's talking about? Who is the angel? Understand, ladies and gentlemen, whether George Bush understands the speeches he's given or not, I don't know. But the people who write those speeches really do understand the true spiritual nature of so much of what's going on today. So once you begin to understand that, if you've never seen my talk on the secrets of the Illuminati, it's basically the Brotherhood of Darkness, but with a lot more pictures, and pictures many times will help you to understand what indeed is going on. Secrets of the Illuminati, I think, is a talk that is well worthwhile getting. If you, or either that, of course, our Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you haven't read the book, you need to have it. You need to have the documentation so you know where you can get the information, so you can talk to others intelligently about what's going on. Understand that there are secret societies, not one, but many of them that are working out there in America today and really throughout the world. But they all have a common goal, and that is to bring about a one-world government, a one-world religion, and, of course, to destroy Christianity, and finally to install the coming one-world leader. And if you don't know anything about the Rosicrucians, they have websites. They're not going to tell you the truth, but at least you'll know they're there. You can look up the Lucis Trust, lucistrust.org. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House. You can certainly go to the Theosophist website, and, of course, understand that these are the people who are directing our country today, and they control our intelligence agencies, just as during the Elizabethan time in Great Britain. In 1600, early 1600s, they controlled the intelligence agencies at that time in Great Britain. That's why, of course, you certainly want to get the DVD, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, and the sequel to that, Riddles in Stone, which will show you all the architecture and, of course, the statues and the pictures in our nation's capital, showing the occult influence at the time our nation was created. Ladies and gentlemen, understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Make sure you have a personal relationship with the Lord. If you don't have one, why, I'd suggest you start reading the Bible and begin to understand how this all fits together. Go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, watch our videos. Watch the new section we have on other videos. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.